Again, good to be here, but I am amazed and overwhelmed. I was thinking about, this is the first church that I pastored, and I came here in August of 1967. Donnie, that was leading the singing, was as small as some of my grandkids. August of 1967, and today, August of 2024, a mere 57 years later, I'm standing up here preaching. Yeah, well, we'll see. Let me go a little further, and then we'll see if... But God is good. Okay, enough of an introduction. Stories told of a man who was bitten by a dog, and he went to the doctor, and they did the tests, and the doctor came back into the room, and the doctor said to him, he says, "I'm sorry to tell you, but you have rabies." The man immediately took out a pencil and paper and started writing. And the doctor said, whoa, just a minute. You don't understand. You have rabies, and I'm not telling you that that what you are going to have to go through to cure it isn't going to be tough, but we've made great advances in medicine, and you're going to be okay. You don't have to write out a will. The guy says, "You don't understand, I'm not writing out a will. I'm writing a list of people I want to bite." Now that, folks, is an attitude, right? And we're going to talk a little about attitude today, but a different kind of attitude. What's your attitude when it comes to your belief in or your trust in Jesus Christ? Maybe you noticed by your bulletin, I hope you did, we're in Mark chapter 8. I would encourage you to turn there. Mark chapter 8. We're looking at the question, as in the most important question that any of us will ever answer. Beginning in verse 27, Jesus and his disciples went to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" And Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." What do you say today? Who is Jesus? Peter said he's the Messiah, meaning the promised one that is to come from God. Others said, the Son of God. Some said, the ones who came to save us. Some say, in response to who is Jesus, he's the one who came from God, who lived, who died, and who rose again. And the Bible teaches us that Jesus is the one who conquered the grave, so that Jesus ultimately is the one who's got it all under control. But as we live our lives, is that how we see it? That God's got it all under control? We're reminded of that again and again in the scriptures, but did it end there? Did God lose control after the Bible was written? Or does God still have it all under control? Do we experience God as the God who's got it all under control? Is that experience of our lives? It didn't end with the Bible, and there's all kinds of illustrations, and maybe you have some to share, but there are all kinds of illustrations of people who experience that God has it all under control. Charles Colson, who goes back a lot of years, but Charles Colson, who served in the Nixon administration and was found guilty of some crimes and sent to prison, that Charles Colson, the Colson who found Christ, and they talk a lot about salvation, finding salvation when you're in prison, as it's a convenient thing. Well, for him, it was not just a convenient thing. He found Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior, and he started an organization called Prison Fellowship that is still to this day one of the most powerful Christian organizations in our country. Well, Charles Colson, as head of Prison Fellowship, was invited to speak to the largest prison in our country. A day before he was to speak, there was a riot in that prison, and there was a lockdown. And so that day when he got there to speak, he was told we're in lockdown, and only a few of the prisoners that we think are the least violent are going to be able to come to hear you speak. In his own mind, he's thinking, you know, I prepared for this. And I wanted to share what we're talking about today. I wanted to share Jesus Christ with this whole prison. And here I am, just a few people are going to hear me speak. So he says he was really disappointed, and he thought, well, maybe since that's the case, I'll just do a little devotional and let him go. But something told him not to do that, and so he preached to these few people that were gathered. He preached his whole sermon. When he finished, and the few that were there left, he said to the warden, he said, privileged to be here, but I really, you know, I feel really sad that more people didn't get to hear my message. The warden says, we've taken that under control, and for the next 3 days, every TV in this prison will carry your message all day. There will be nothing else on but your message, so that every person, I mean, they could hide from it, I guess, but every person in there will hear the message. A reminder to us what? That God's got it all under control. Who do you say that Jesus is? Is he someone you can trust? Is he someone that you do trust? Can you trust God with the little things in your life? Little things that don't seem to mean much? I thought of a lot of places where I can think of the little things where I experienced God and God at work. Now, some as they hear these things might say, I don't know. Well, that's up to them. I think it was God at work. For example, over 2 years ago in 22, I was filling in up at Eldora at the Congregational Church up there. And it's interesting to me, as I go into a lot of churches, it's interesting, all the churches that I go into, they think how they do it is the right way to do it, and that everybody does it the way that they do it. Are you aware, for example, that not everybody has quiet time after the message? In fact, there are very few of you that do that. But anyway, everybody thinks that how they do it's the right way to do it. Well, at that church, they didn't have quiet time, but they had a thing called reflection. So after the message, the pianist would play, and they have a baby grand also. The pianist would play a song, and you're to sit there and reflect. Okay, on that particular Sunday, there was nothing in the bulletin. There was no sermon title. There were no scriptures. Nobody at that church knew anything about what I was going to talk about that day. In the course of it, I mentioned, it was a main point, but I mentioned an old hymn, "His Eye is on the Sparrow." And then when I finished the sermon, I sat down. Now, I had looked in their hymn books. "His Eye is on the Sparrow" was not in their hymn books. So I sat down, and I'm sitting there meditating, as I'm sure all of you do when it comes to open worship. And it took me a second, but the pianist that Sunday was Amber Smitherman. That ring a bell? Yeah, I see several heads nodding, because it was, I don't know how many years ago, but it was not that many years ago that she and her husband were here, and he was the youth pastor. And anyway, she was playing the piano that day, and she played "His Eye is on the Sparrow." And I'm thinking, wow. And I'd figured out it wasn't in the hymnal, even if I hadn't looked, because she was all over that keyboard, so I knew it was not in the hymnal. At any rate, when the service was over, I went up to her and I said, "Amber, I'm really impressed that," I said, "how on earth did you do that?" She said, "Well, one, that's my mom's favorite hymn." And she said, "Number two, a couple of weeks ago, I was playing in another church, and I had to do a lot more, including a lot more songs before the worship started. And that was one of the songs that I played, and it was still in my book that I carry." My question is, did God do that? Does God care that much about the little things? And why is that important? It's important because if God cares that much about the little stuff, how much more does he care about the big stuff? And if we can trust him in the little things, how much more can we trust him in the big things? How much more can we trust him when it comes to the biggest thing? How much more can we trust him when it comes to the end? For the truth is what? For all of us, unless Jesus comes back, we are going to face the end. I just had a funeral yesterday, and I don't do that very often, but it was somebody that was in my youth group years ago, and her husband had passed away, and she asked me to do the service. 59 years old. The day is going to come for all of us. So how do we view that? How do we deal with that? The Bible tells us that Jesus conquered the grave. Romans 6 in the Message tells us that he put an end to death as the end. And it goes on to say that we will never again face death as the last word because of what Jesus has done. So even up until the big thing, the end of this life, God's got it all under control. Beginning in January of 2023, I started filling in at the Liscum Church of Christ, not every Sunday, but a lot of Sundays, right over here. And I preached there a Sunday last month, and that was the 32nd time that I've preached there since January of 2023. The reason that I was preaching there, and maybe a lot of you know this, but the reason that I was preaching there was because in December of 22, right, right before the end of the year, right before the start of January, right before Christmas, we live in Marshalltown. I was in Marshalltown with my granddaughter, and we were going to a fast and fresh. She made me do it. I'm not mentioning your name, Naomi. So we go into the fast and fresh, and I am over getting what I want, and she's over by the donuts. And after I get what I want, I walk over to her, and who's standing there but Ralph Norman? Ralph Norman, who grew up in this area, a little farm just a couple miles from here. Right, Scott? A couple miles from here. At any rate, Ralph Norman standing there. Now, Ralph Norman had been the pastor there for, I think he told me, 8 or 9 years. He came back from Ohio where he was pastoring. At any rate, I was giving him a tough time. I said, Ralph, you haven't called me to fill in for you. Ralph was notorious for not taking any Sundays off. And I had filled in for him a couple times, but not many. I said, Ralph, you haven't called me in a long time. I said, you really need to take some time off. He says, yeah, that's what my wife tells me. So we talked for a while, and then we left. The next morning, we get a text on our phone. I'll be honest, my wife got a text on the phone. I can't find mine. Any of the family will tell you that. Got a text on the phone that Ralph had passed away in his sleep. So, you know, churches are a little slow sometimes at getting around to stuff. Well, they were working on a picture directory for their church, and they hadn't gotten it done. And they were close to getting it done when Ralph passed away. Well, so while I was filling in there, they passed out one Sunday these directories that they finally got done. And they dedicated it to Ralph. And Ralph had written the cover page for the directory. And so obviously that was in there too. And on the cover page, Ralph wrote, I'm going to read the whole thing. But Ralph wrote in part, and he quoted Philippians 1:21. Which says, for me to live is Christ, and die is gain. And then he wrote, we must always remember that our true citizenship is in heaven. We are just travelers on this earth. We need to be reminded of that. David Jeremiah, I don't know how many of you listen to him, know him, the speaker and author. He talks about this again and again and again and again. And he concludes all of that almost every time by saying, and so as we live our lives, we can choose to worry or fear, or we can choose to worship, to trust God. He said, I choose to worship. What do you choose? As you live your life, what do you choose? Oswald Chambers, the devotional writer, said that worry, fear, and by the way, those are pretty much the same thing, worry and fear. Worry is an addiction, and an indication that we think God cannot look after us. What do you think? Can God look after you? Can God take care of you? And do you trust Him to do it? Do you trust Him as you live your life? That He's got it all under control? One more quote from Henry Blackaby. My oldest son will tell you why I'm doing this, but Henry Blackaby says, after all, fear betrays a lack of trust in God. When we truly know that God sustains us, we have no reason to fear. And he says, apparently the psalmist David knew that because he said in Psalm 56, in God I have put my trust, and I will not fear. Trust, faith. Is that how we live our lives? Believing that God has it all under control? I think one of the, and I may have shared with this with you already, but one of the clearest pictures I think there is of faith is the story of the African impala. The African impala is one of the most amazing creatures on the face of God's earth. Less than 3 foot tall, one of the fastest animals on earth, and yet this African impala can jump 10 feet in the air. If it had hands, it could dunk a basketball. 10 feet in the air, and it can leap 33 feet. An amazing animal. And yet, poachers capture these African impalas and take them to sell them. And to hold them until they sell them, they build a solid wood fence corral 3 foot high. Now, are you following me? 3 foot high, solid fence, and they put these impalas in there. These impalas that can leap how high? 10 feet in the air. Thanks for listening. And can jump 33 feet. How is that possible? The answer is that an impala will not jump unless it can see where its feet are going to land. Do I need to explain that one to you? As Christians, how often are we willing to trust God when we don't know how things are going to work out? When we don't see where our feet are going to land? When we don't know what's going to happen? Real faith is to trust God when we can't see anything. I've incentivized my grandkids to memorize some scriptures that I want them to know. And one of the scriptures that I had them memorize was my favorite verse in Psalms, Psalm 33:22. May your unfailing love be with us, Lord, even as we put our hope in you. About 3 days later, one of my grandkids came to me. I won't mention your name, Lyndon. One of my grandkids came to me and said, I got it, Grandpa. I said, let's hear it. And he said, may your unfailing love be with us, God, even as we put our faith in you. So close. One word. And I should have probably let it go, but I wanted him to have it right. So I said, Lyndon, that's so close. Try it again. And he did. And again, same thing. Even as we put our faith in you. I said, one more time. I said, you're so close. It's the last part of the verse, and you've missed one word. And so, may your unfailing love be with us, God, even as we put our hope in you. I share that with you today because even though he was wrong, he was right. Because if you and I live our lives and we have real faith, we will have hope. Again this morning, thank you for this privilege.